flying heroes, this is Stan Lee coming at you. I want you to know, Marvel has always been and always will be a reflection of the world right outside our window. That world may change and evolve, but the one thing that will never change is the way we tell our stories of heroism. Those stories have room for everyone, regardless of their race, gender, religion, or color of their skin. The only things we don't have room for are hatred, intolerance, and bigotry. That man next to you, he's your brother. That woman over there, she's your sister. And that kid walking by, hey, who knows? He may have the proportionate strength of a spider. We're all part of one big family, the human family. And we all come together in the body of Marvel. And you, you're part of that family. You're part of the Marvel universe that moves ever upward and onward to greater glory. In other words, Excelsior!
Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that today will celebrate the great life of Mr.
Life of Stanley. Yep.
Yes. We're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com, and we're always on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station. I'm Walter DeRaglia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And Chris, you played a beautiful piece there at the front. What was
it? Yeah, you know what? I found that, I'll be honest, I found that on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
It's called Stan Lee's Message to Us. And it's by a guy named Filibuster or something like that. Check it out. It's Stan Lee's Message to Us.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Chris, again, we're going to dedicate this show. This is a very special show for me, to the late, great Stan Lee. Stan Lee passed away at the age of 95 2 days ago, Monday, November the 12th.
Yes.
Now, Chris, let me ask you. I know where I was when I heard the news.
Yeah, you know what?
He's for me in my life, an important enough person that, you know how you remember?
Yep.
Yeah, I knew exactly where I was.
Yeah, where were you?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I was at the bank. And I was going to the bank. I was at the library show.
Oh, nice.
I was at a library show, and we were like selling graphic novels to libraries.
Oh, nice, nice.
And I was sitting there just looking up for a librarian a book, whether
we
can order for them or not. And I started getting pings and pings.
I was probably one of them.
Yeah. And I go, what the heck is this? And I finish a thing. And then it's like, Stan Lee passed away.
Yeah.
Stan Lee passed away. And honestly, for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's how I was just inundated with messages.
Sure.
Now, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
A couple of the funny ones is I had a couple people send me their condolences.
I did too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. My wife, I told my wife, and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, babe. You know,
right.
She sent me, and some other friends that sent me text messages.
Yeah.
Condolences.
Are you okay?
And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But, you know, oddly enough, I actually was very ill yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And it just came suddenly in the middle of the night.
Right.
And then I'm fine today. So
right.
I think there was something, you know, a little bit more, something with that.
Right.
I don't really know what, but I was very sick. I was on the couch when I started getting all the messages.
Everything touches us in different ways. I have a good friend in Brantford, Ontario. And we called him today, coming in, because he said he was coming in. And he honestly says, guys, I'm like, I'm down.
Yeah.
Like, I'm down. I'm not coming in. And I go, wow. He goes, yeah, I didn't think I shouldn't
be
taking
this. It's affecting
this
a lot
hard,
of people. It really is. Yeah.
That's a beautiful, kind of a beautiful thing to hear.
You know, obviously, we're devoting this entire episode to Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were doing. I was doing some research yesterday and today just to kind of, you know, see if there's anything different that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, I don't think, you know, I think 5 days ago, if you had typed in Stan Lee, you wouldn't get the kind of hits that you're getting now.
Right.
There are hundreds of stories and articles and and video is all about Stan Lee out there right now. And so he clearly touched a lot of people, and not only touched our hearts as well.
Well, he was everybody's old man. He was everybody's grandpa.
Yeah, he really, you know, he's that affectionate, that's what he became,
lovable
yeah.
grandpa, yeah. right? Yeah. And it's just a beautiful thing. Well, let's listen. Let's try to keep some structure to the show.
Yes.
Well, we will. We'll start with your new this week, as we do every week. And we do have a sponsor. We have to continue we have to pay the bills.
Right.
This week's new this week is brought to you by Stan Lee's School of Cameo Acting. You got a bit part in a school play, a Broadway production, or even a feature film? Stan Lee will show you how to steal how to steal the show.
He can do it. Yes, he can do it for sure. Well, listen, we're going to do a little bit different. I'm not going to go on and on about each book, but I have chosen books this week that Stan had a large part in each one of them.
Oh, fantastic.
So the first one, and I think it's probably the most apropos one, is Captain America number 5 comes out this week.
Right.
And we'll get more into that later, but we can talk about that because Stan Lee, one of his very first published works.
Started with Captain America. 1941.
America. Yeah, 1941. Right.
Now that is number 5. So that's obviously another relaunch.
Legacy number would be 709.
There, 709. Yeah, so. Awesome. They should count the 74 Golden Age ones.
They should.
Well,
I totally agree. And then yeah.
Close
yeah.
to 800. All right. Hold on here. Let me do my job.
Sorry.
Captain America, Stan Lee's. No, it's not Stan Lee's. But Stan Lee. Stan Lee brought him back, though.
Yeah, Stan Lee brought him back. Yeah.
So Stan Lee's Captain America number 5 is at your local comic book shop today.
Perfect. All right. Well, we all know that the character was created by Simon and Kirby.
Yes.
But Stan Lee had a big part to play in it as well. Next one we got to talk about here is Fantastic Four number 3, Legacy numbers 648. And of course, Fantastic Four. That was the start of it all in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we have all what we do today, basically.
Well, it's such a beautiful thing to see Fantastic Four back at your local comic book shop new this week.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you told me, you know, Captain America Legacy numbering 709.
Yeah.
And then you told me Fantastic Four number 600 and something.
I know. Well, it's because it going, stopped for so
how
long.
Can that be? You know, because it was always the one that was the highest.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But then when you think about it, Marvel didn't publish it for years, you know, trying to win the rights back.
That's
right. And everybody's excited that Marvel has the rights back.
That's right, yeah.
Hey, Fantastic Four number 3
yep.
at your local comic book shop.
All right. Next up, let's do Uncanny X-Men. Now, this is interesting because this isn't just X-Men. This isn't X-Men Gold or X-Men Black or X-Men Blue. Mm-hmm. This is a return to the Uncanny X-Men title, which is the first title... which is what X-Men became, you know, way back in the day. So it was X-Men by Stan Lee, and then it became Uncanny X-Men, right? And now it's back to the Uncanny X-Men again.
Wonderful. And that's a nice, thick-ass book right there. That is a big book. Legacy number 620.
This is issue number 1. So
issue number 1 of Uncanny X-Men. Yep. X-Men Disassembled, part 1, at your local comic book shop.
All right. Next up, we've got Avengers number 700.
Woo!
I can't
legacy number and regular number.
I can't tell you what the legacy number is, but it's probably is 700.
Of course it is.
Yeah. What?
Of course it is. Yeah.
I was wondering why I didn't say that.
They'll return to legacy when it's convenient for them. Chris.
So
you know that.
That's true. That is true. So Avengers number 700 today.
Right. Is it one of those that has those variants and stuff?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that?
All kinds of variants involved with that, too.
We're not going to get into all that. We'll tackle that subject on another day, but you know how I feel about all those variants.
I know.
Avengers number 700 is on your new this week stand today. And remember, everyone Chris so far has said, including the next one, are Stan Lee co-creations we're honoring today.
And finally, we've got Amazing Spider-Man number 9. Number 9. Legacy number 810.
Nice! Attaboy, Spidey, 810. Oh, Great Black Cat. That's a good-looking book right there.
A good-looking book.
Legacy number 810, Amazing Spider-Man number 9 at your local comic book shop. Now, Chris, you've showed us 5 or 6 or 7. The good news about your local comic shop on a Wednesday.
Yep. If
you walk in and you check out the new this week, odds are there's a dozen that have some sort of Stan Lee connection in there.
For sure. So we encourage
everybody to head into their local comic book shop and peruse especially Stan Lee related books today.
That's right. All right, listen. We're going to have a quick pause. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring it back to the Spider-Man Krantz comic or cartoons.
Thanks for honoring my request there.
No problem. And then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about Stan and his legacy and all things basically Stan today. Yeah. Hold on. I thought you were going to say something, Walt.
Oh, yeah, I got some Stan Lee stories.
No, but... I thought you were going to say something. Hold on. Here we go. Here.
Work, Chris. Can never get enough Krantz. Hey, brings us to industry news section of our show, or brings us to the Stan Lee section of our show. And the Stan Lee section of our show is brought to you by Stan Lee Cigs.
Nice.
Lighting up has never been so much fun.
Dan, he probably smoked, eh? He did
in the old days. Of course, though, that was a play on words on Stan Lee signature series.
Oh.
Now, Chris, I got to tell you that, Mr. Lee has passed away.
Yep.
Just ripe old age of 95. I wish us both that same.
Absolutely.
Longevity and quality of life. Like he was really good almost right till the near end.
Yep. There. Yep.
And, but, you go on eBay, and it's one of eBay is like a marketplace, right?
Oh yeah,
and the market reacts to a giant like that passing.
Sure.
So, Jay at the shop, he noted that when Stan Lee passed away, he checked he just went to eBay yeah. and he typed in Stan Lee.
Yeah.
And there was 15,000 items up for sale.
Really?
An hour later.
Yeah.
There were 14,000.
Really?
So that means stuff was either A, selling, a combination of, and B, being pulled off.
Yeah. Right?
Yesterday around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I asked him to check again. Yep. There were 25,000 items up on eBay. There were 10,000 plus items about Stan Lee added in one day.
That's crazy.
Right.
That's
because
crazy.
The demand is so great to now have
a
piece of this man's life or whatever, a memento, a keepsake, a souvenir.
Sure.
You know, something sentimental.
Did you ever get Stan Lee's autograph?
I didn't. I met him briefly in 93 when he was, remember, I think you were there too,
at the
Hotel Novotel.
Oh, yeah.
In Toronto. And I've seen him at other shows and stuff, but I was never a signature guy.
Right.
And back then, he was so accessible. My goodness, just
walking
up and down the aisles, so saying hi to everybody. Excelsior! Just walking by. I never got anything signed by
him. I got two things signed. One, I didn't get anything signed at the Novotel show, but I got my Daredevil number 2 signed, which I eventually sold to you a long time ago in Chicago.
Yep.
And then in Pittsburgh, I got a Spider-Man signed as well. So, no, I didn't. I didn't get a Spider-Man signed. I got a Thor signed, the first Destroyer.
Now, how did you find him?
The first time was amazing. He was very accessible, though. I think the lineup was like 12 people.
Right?
Like, there was nobody. Now, the second time, there was a giant room, and people were waiting. And,
uh-huh.
But this was, I'm going to say, it was when I got married, so in 2000. 12.
Gotta be careful there. He was huge by then,
yeah. But it was 6 years ago.
Right.
So, and his health really hadn't been failing yet. And he was just walking around like a, like, you know, regular a old
spry young
spry
man.
Spry guy. Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, it was a great experience. By that time, he had all kinds of handlers and all that kind of stuff. Whereas before, you'd just walk up to him.
Yeah, in the old days. Yeah, was, yeah, right. It's like everybody else back in the
I remember, you know, when I was getting my Daredevil number two sign, I remember I said to him, hey, Stan, I'm getting my number two sign. He goes, why didn't you get number one sign? I said, my number one's really beat. And he goes, that's good. I don't sign beat books.
Oh, but later he did. I've seen some dogs. What a great line.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
You're all right, kid. You're all right.
Yeah. So it was all good. All good.
Awesome. Hey, listen, Chris. We got, you know what? Honestly, for Stan Lee, we probably need eight shows.
Yeah, days.
Yeah, yeah. Eight shows, yeah. Really. Yeah. But let's try to tackle this man's legacy.
Okay, I want to start. I'm going to ask you a couple questions because I think this might lead into what you're going to talk about.
Okay, go ahead.
So I got a couple questions for you. A bit of a Stan Lee quiz. We can revisit this later.
Oh, right on. Or just keep going. Let's just go with the flow.
Well, okay. So you kind of mentioned a little bit at the beginning. So what character did Lee write for that was his first big break?
His first big break was Captain America.
Right.
He wrote a 2-page text story for number 3.
Right now, okay, so back up for a second. So for those of you that are listening, they're wondering what the heck you mean by that. Uh-huh. So in the sometimes they didn't always have stories that had pictures with them.
Right.
It was just a full on prose/ you know text story. It was two comic pages.
He was 18 years old.
Yeah, and that was his first big break. Yeah,
and then 2 issues later, he got a comic book story written into issue number 5.
Yeah. Amazing.
So there you go. Captain America.
Now going with that, same flow.
Same flow.
What's his first superhero creation?
I believe that is from Mystic Comics number 6.
Oh, you're good.
The Destroyer.
Yes. Yes, you're good. Now, in the same month, he also created Jack Frost for USA Comics number 1 and Father Time for Captain America Comics number 6.
Good for him.
Yeah, so so although Mystic was the first one, those ones came out the same month.
Right. Right. Fantastic.
Yeah. So anyways, we can continue this later on.
Oh, okay. I thought you had more.
I do have more. Do you want me to ask them all?
Ah, let's do it. Come on.
All right. Let's.
Well, I'm all warmed up here.
Well, you're all stand up.
Well, I'm all stand up.
Okay. So now this is an approximate number.
Uh-huh.
How many characters did Stan Lee create?
That is a fantastic question.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic question. You know what this is like?
What's that?
I'm going to tell you what this is like.
What's it like?
You ever go into one of those delicatessens or one of those country fairs and you have to guess how many marbles are in a jar or something that? You know, there's lots, but you haven't got a clue
how close a number,
right? So I'm gonna say he created or co-created 312.
Oh, that's not a bad guess.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is an approximate number that I pulled off, I think, Comic Vine, and I think it was there, and it was 362.
Oh, look at me.
362 characters.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy, right?
That is fantastic. Yeah.
Okay, so now...
That is an active, overactive creative mind.
Really? It's, I know, it's insane. Now, what's the name of the article that he would write in the back of comics, Marvel Comics, every month? The little
Stan's Soapbox.
Stan's Soapbox. We'll talk about that later on.
Oh, I love
basically,
that.
Basically, that was that was his way of connecting to the readers.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Yes, Stan's Soapbox was an innovative... it was been done before editors.
It was kind of like the internet before the internet.
Right.
Because it was his way of connecting with the readers, and they would write back. It was a slow internet, kind of, right? Now, did Stan Lee ever work for DC Comics?
Oh, you know what? I don't know that. I would say yes, only because of the way the world turns.
Yeah.
But if I had to bet money on it, I would say no.
He did.
Oh, I lost money.
He did.
Stan,
in the 2000s, in the early 2000s, Stan Lee had a bit of a falling out with Marvel at the time.
Right.
And he went to go work for DC. And at that time, it was a series that came out called Just Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And this series was basically, they gave him the concept of these characters. And it would be like, you go ahead and write the origin story and write the story. So, so it'd be like, you know, I don't know, like, alien from outer space now is, you know, saves the world all the time. So right. Like the Clark Kent Superman kind of right, thing. So right. He would come up and he worked, I think it was like 8 or 10 different books of these that he did for all the major characters, like Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman. So it was called Just Imagine.
Wow. Hey, while we're on that, and yeah. I didn't know that, probably because I wasn't following comics at that time very much. Well, about a year ago when DC tried to take all of Stan Lee's creations and because Marvel wasn't printing Fantastic Four.
Yeah, yeah.
How are those? I don't see those. Yeah, are they still being published?
Some of them are. Some of them have already been canceled.
Yeah?
Yeah. And if they're not canceled, they're going to be canceled.
Right,
like,
right.
They're soon
yeah.
already.
Right. I remember like that got a lot of press.
The Terrifics by Jeff Lemire.
The Terrifics and all that stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
All right.
So
I got that one wrong.
You got that one wrong. Right. Well, you didn't. You did.
Sorry, Stan.
By the question, you kind of figured it would be right. But
right, yeah.
What was Stan Lee's last writing job in comics?
Oh my goodness, I have not. I would imagine this would have been recently.
So it's a tough question.
Yeah,
and I could be wrong. So if I am wrong, I apologize.
He's doing something. Wasn't he doing something with some sort of policeman in Toronto on like some sort of raccoon story?
So I'm talking about an actual comic book that's being published, not something like not just like a. Write-up or an idea.
Okay,
I mean, an actual comic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, it could be, as I said, it could be wrong, but uh-huh. I'm pretty sure it was a comic called Soldier Zero, and it came out in 2011. And we're talking about like the concept. And actual,
right.
Like,
a creation,
stuff.
A Stan Lee
creation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he wrote, it was called Soldier Zero, and I believe it was published by Boom.
Oh, so. Okay. See, I did not know that. Again, during that time, I think, you know, my comic... You know, cutting edge, staying on top of comics wasn't as good, you know, post 2000
right.
You know, was pre 2000.
Okay, but. two more questions.
All right.
Then we'll get to some of the other stuff there. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, Stan Lee has dabbled in a lot of different things over the years.
Sorcery.
So, what is the name of the adult oriented animated TV series he co created? I'm pretty sure it had the voice of Pamela Anderson.
Chris, I don't involve myself in material like that, so that's an unfair question. Being a man of the, I don't know what I'm a man of. I don't know.
Stripperella.
Hello.
She was a stripper by night ish,
and an Ella by day,
and an Ella, like a hero by day kind of thing.
Well, good for her.
Yeah.
And did this make publication or was it?
It
just
was a TV series.
Oh, it was a TV series.
It was a cartoon.
Oh, I see.
It was on, what do you call it? What's that show?
Penthouse Channel?
No. Nothing so extreme. It was like Adult Swim. So that's the more mature cartoons that they play on the Cartoon Network at nighttime.
Right. I've seen, I've opened a couple of those mature cartoons you sent me.
Hey, easy. We're talking about Stan Lee today.
Stan Lee.
Finally, one more
Stay
question.
On target.
One more question.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you'll know this.
Right.
Which famous children's author did Lee work with while he was in the army?
Children's author in the 1940s.
Yep.
Children's author. I don't even know a children's author in the 1940s. It can't be Tolkien because he was British.
Yeah.
It can't be who wrote Nancy Drew.
I have no idea.
Was it Agatha Christie? No, that weren't children's books. I don't know.
Dr. Seuss.
Oh, look at that.
So he actually, so when he was working in the army, he was working for like the film and. It's not the right term, so don't correct me on this. I'll call it propaganda divisions. He was creating cartoons and creating films and all that kind of stuff. And he worked with Theodore Geisel, who became Dr. Seuss.
Right.
But he also worked with, which I didn't know about this, was he worked with Charles Adams, who went on to create the Adams Family cartoon and successfully the TV show. And he also worked with Frank Capra, who directed It's a Wonderful Life.
My goodness.
So
wow.
Talk about a guy that has really led
right.
a full life.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
Yeah. Talk about being connected and talk about just being in that moment of American history where just everything was going
crazy.
On. That's fantastic.
Yeah, just crazy.
All right, Chris. I what I wanted to do today was just... And it's like a beefy thing, and we'll try to get through it. But I think we really got to pay homage to what Stan Lee brought to the world. Never mind his creations. We'll save that till later. But just the way Stan told stories, I wanted to touch on you know, Stan's use of, let's say, the crossover.
Right, right.
Stan's crossovers.
Yeah.
Hey, do you know what Marvel's first crossover was in the 1960s? It's a two-way tie.
Oh, in the 60s.
And, you know, like Marvel, the Marvel Revolution.
Yeah.
So a crossover, by the way, is when one character leaves his book and makes a guest appearance in another
book. So I think I know the answer to this. I think I know the answer.
Yeah, it's a two-way tie.
Two books?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Amazing Spider-Man number one.
Yes, sir.
With when they had the Fantastic Four in Spider-Man.
That's right.
And I think, and I could be wrong,
uh-huh.
Now it's a Fantastic Four book.
Yes.
But is it FF3? FF3, FF12?
Yes, 12.
Where, yeah. That's the one where the Hulk is sort of hiding behind that concrete or the cave or something.
FF12. So those are the first two Marvel crossovers. And of course, the way Stan Lee used the crossovers in this fledgling Marvel universe was, you know, really revolutionary.
Oh, yeah.
And it tied everything together, and it made the fan a fan of the whole universe,
right,
as opposed to a fan of the character.
Well, because you realize that this was not a single idea, right?
Right.
Like,
it was a connected universe that they all lived and they all co-inhabited and they all came across and helped each other. And of course, his use of the antagonistic introductions is legendary.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like, you never had two heroes meet for the first time on friendly terms.
No.
They ended up fighting each other.
Well, and I know that that's a staple in comics.
Right.
But I think people who don't know comics, you know, they would see the movies and they'd be like, why is Iron Man and Thor fighting?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, well, 'cause that's what they do.
Right.
Right? Like,
it's an homage. It's a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just that when we look at the flowering, the fruition of that Stan Lee vision can be seen in the Avengers movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the manifestation to the end.
Yeah.
Or nth degree. When we're watching those Avengers movies and we're just you know, inundated with this beautiful cross interaction with all our favorite heroes and stuff like that, that harkens back to Stan's real focus on the crossovers of that early Marvel age in the 60s. So that's just a beautiful thing that he, obviously he didn't introduce it, but it's just
but it's something that he really
took it
pushed
to the nth level.
Yeah,
right.
He really pushed that level. Yeah. He really wanted to make sure that he knew.
He redefined it.
It was a universe. It wasn't just in standalone issues, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing he did, which in today's day and age, you almost kind of second hat now how all the creators get a lot of billing on comic books.
Yeah.
You know, we all know who inked it, who colored it, who edited it.
Yeah.
Stan was the first to kind of really focus on the splash page of a comic, to really focus on making sure the letterer, the inker got the credit, the colorist,
everybody,
you know, the artist and the writer. You know, and that led to great fame, or not great fame, but
absolutely
way more fame than it would have been an anonymous.
For sure. I mean, you know, you kind of knew, I didn't read, I wasn't around in the 60s, but if I, you know, you could, once you get involved in reading comics, you get to know the art and who the artists are. But I mean, I wouldn't have been able to really know who those artists are without a guy like Stan, because when I was reading comics in the, you know, the 70s and 80s, you know, I would follow, I really like John Byrne. I really like you know, all these guys. And I was able to do that. And that's thanks to Stan, because now we had credit for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely right. And so I wanted to save the last one. Again, these cool things that Stan brought to comics above and beyond the characters is that soapbox that you were talking about.
I love the soapbox.
Yeah.
I love it. So, yeah, I want to talk about that for a minute, because I think for me, this was a way of connecting with the readers. Now, so what am I talking about here? So back when Stan was editor-in-chief and writing comics, he would also have in the back of the pages these little blurbs, and in the back of, like, there was, first it was always talk about from the Marvel bullpen, and it was always talk about, like, what's going on in the Marvel universe and all these things. But Stan would always have this little thing called Stan's soapbox, And he would, now sometimes he would use this as a forum to, you know, talk about, you know, things that were going on with Marvel at the time. So, yeah. Hey, true believers. Hey, next issue. We're going to see the appearance of, we're going to come up with a new character next month, and he's going to be an awesome character for the Spider-Man universe and that kind of stuff. But a lot of times he would also use this as a forum just to talk to the readers. It's funny, you know, this really hit home with me today when I was reading about these Stan soapboxes, because for years, you know, growing up, you and I, comics are for kids. Comics, who cares about comics? Like, there were throwaways. But then I started rereading some of these soapboxes. And let me just read a couple here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read this first one. It says, so this is Stan's soapbox from Avengers number 74.
Right.
It says, from time to time, we receive letters from readers who wonder why there's so much moralizing in our mags. They take great pains to point out that comics are supposed to be escapist reading and nothing more. But somehow, I can't see it that way. It seems to me that a story without a message, however subliminal, is like a man without a soul. In fact, even the most escapist literature of all, old-time fairy tales and heroic legends, contained moral and philosophical points of view.
Mm-hmm.
At every college campus where I speak, there's as much discussion of war and peace, civil rights, and so-called youth rebellion as there is of our Marvel mags per se. None of us lives in a vacuum. None of us is untouched by the everyday events about us, events which shape our stories just as they shape our lives. Sure, our tales can be called escapist, but just because something's for fun doesn't mean we have to blanket our brains while we read it. Excelsior.
Wow. What he just did there, he reworded in that intro we played at the beginning of the show, basically.
Yep.
So his views have not changed
did
in
not
50
change.
Years,
no,
right?
Did
so,
not
which
change.
Is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Wow.
So
that's fantastic.
I got one more here. And yep. This is now he, you know, obviously he helped co-create Black Panther, and he was a big advocate in bringing, you know, all
civil rights
and all races,
the women's liberation
and ethnicities
movement,
to the
yes,
forefront.
Yes.
So this is a famous one. I'm sure if you've ever read any of them, you may have already read this, but I'm going to say it on the air anyways here.
Right.
This is from December 1968. And of course, all these went in a lot of the different books in that same month.
Right.
So he's going to say it right here. Let's lay it right on the line. Bigotry and racism are among the deadliest social ills plaguing the world today. But unlike a team of costumed supervillains, they can't be halted with a punch in the snoot or a zap from a ray gun. The only way to destroy them is to expose them, to reveal them for the insidious evils they really are. The bigot is an unreasoning hater, one who hates blindly, fanatically, indiscriminately. If his hang-up is a black man, he hates all black men. If a redhead once offended him, he hates all redheads. If some foreigner beat him to a job, he's down on all foreigners. He hates people he's never seen, people he's never known, with equal intensity, with equal venom. Now, we're not trying to say it's unreasonable for one human human being to bug another, but although anyone has the right to dislike another individual, it's totally irrational, patently insane to condemn an entire race, to despise an entire nation, to vilify an entire religion. Sooner or later, we must learn to judge each other on our own merits. Sooner or later, if man is ever to be worthy of his destiny, we must fill our hearts with tolerance. For then, and only then, will we be truly worthy of the concept that man was created in the image of God, a God who calls us all his children.
Wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
Mr. Lee.
So, you know, he I can't see how you can call comics for kids when he has this forum. Now, I understand it is Stan's soapbox. It is
right.
A forum. He gets up and he gets on what people might call his high horse, but it's not just, you know, funny books.
It's the old catch 22 though. Stan at that time knew that he had an audience and knew that his voice was being heard. And he actually chose to say things that were near and dear to his heart.
Absolutely.
And that he thought were socially responsible, as opposed to, you know, I hope Spider-Man can, you know,
can win again.
The Kingpin,
yeah.
You know, and trying to sell comics.
Right.
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 And
now he did that too.
No, I know that, but he didn't have to do this.
No, he didn't.
He did not have to rock the boat like
not
this.
Not even a little.
Because I'm sure it offended a lot of
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
You know, who are you to tell me? Who are you? Who's this guy? Right.
Yeah, that's
you know,
right.
That kind of stuff. So, That's powerful stuff.
It is.
Is what it is. All right, Chris, we got the problem is I have to apologize to everybody listening to this show because Chris and I, we talked about this show before it started and we go, my God, we have like 10 days, 12 days worth of stuff here. Yeah. And I feel like we're almost hurrying.
Yeah, we're like barely scratching the surface.
Of everything. Yeah. And we're just trying to touch a few topics. And we apologize if it seems rushed. We're trying to, you know, pick our battles.
Our ideas and what we want to talk about.
But we're going to do a musical interlude and continue
with
the show.
We're going to come right back after a quick musical interlude here. This one's called Drive On.
Drive On. Oh, that's sweet stuff.
Did you like that?
Yeah, you know what? And I'm sure our late great friend, Mr. Stan Lee, was loving this back in the day. He might have been sitting in on that studio. That's what I want to, boys, I'm taking my lunch break, heading down to the studio.
I saw a YouTube clip of him the other day talking about how he loved music. He always wanted to play an instrument, but he realized he had no talent, but he still loved guys like Tommy Dorsey and the big bands and all that. So he would have loved this.
Right. Mr. D. Tommy Dorsey.
Yep.
Hey, Chris, we're continuing on with the Stan Lee Show. And the next segment of the Stan Lee Show is brought to you by the Stan Lee fans.
Stan Lee fans.
Stan, you are forever and will be the man.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything.
Absolutely. All right. I like it.
Listen.
Yeah.
Excelsior.
Excelsior.
That's his catchphrase.
It is.
But did you know?
Oh.
That wasn't the first pick of his?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I got an inside source back in New York in the day, and he says, oh, no. He goes, Stan. He goes, you kidding me? He was trying a million of them before that one stuck. And so he sent me a list. Yeah, he sent me a list of things that he was.
That's awfully nice of him.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I hope they're as funny as you thinking they're going to be fun.
All right. Okay. Well, I'd love to hear them.
So Stan Lee, you know, was looking for that catchphrase because, you know, he was becoming a personality. And the first one he tried was, "Na zdrovje!"
Nice.
Right, but then he found out that he'd be hammered by the fourth guy he met every time, and then that just wasn't working out for him. So he put that one to bed.
That's a good one, though.
And then he came up with one and went like this. He went, Yabba Dabba Doo! But then the vibe he got, it was ancient.
Oh,
he didn't want to use it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it could have been used already.
Yeah, it might have been. Then he tried, he had an epiphany and he goes, hey, and you know what? Oy vey!
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, but he kept getting a headache because he kept thumping his head when he said oy vey. And then he goes,
just get a migraine that way.
A lot of Tylenols and that. I don't even know there's Tylenols back then, but a lot of aspirin. So he let oy vey go, you know. And then he came up with one. He thought he had a winner.
Okay.
Who's your granddaddy?
I think he said that in later life.
Oh, he did? Yeah. No, I think he said that even early. But no, that wouldn't make sense, would it? Okay, well. That might have been a typo.
Oh, okay.
But the reason he stopped, it might have been who's your daddy.
Oh,
he was saying,
right.
And he modified
it
to who's your granddaddy.
Right.
But he had to stop when too many people were answering you.
Nice.
Then he had, he tried this one for a while. Hooray!
Oh, that's a good one. That's nice. I like that. It's very simple.
Yeah, well, he stopped that one because the reaction was just like the one that you just gave me.
Oh,
right now.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah.
And then he also tried one more. He thought this one stuck, but he got some local resistance. It was tally-ho!
Oh, tally-ho!
Tally-ho! Hey. But the hookers on 42nd Street didn't like it. And they were just down from the office.
Oh,
so he discarded that one and found Excelsior.
Oh, that's good that he found. Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
So yeah. I appreciate Simon for sending that
in. Thanks, Simon. I appreciate it.
And sending it. So, but can there be? Isn't it beautiful though that Tally Ho? Oh my goodness, Tally Ho! I said that.
Tally Ho!
Tally Ho! That Excelsior stuck.
Yeah, totally stuck.
It's so fitting for
Excelsior.
Him. Excelsior!
And doesn't it upward and onward or something like that?
Yeah, it does. It means a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Including that, it means I think whatever you want it to mean.
Sure.
It means I think from Stan Lee. You know what it means?
What's it mean?
Leave me the hell alone. I'm getting the hell out of here. Excelsior.
Get your pages in on time.
Yeah, I got to go. Right? But it's fantastic.
Nice.
Anyway, Chris, what's your favorite Stan Lee creation?
Oh, you know, I knew you were going to ask me that.
This is a hard one.
Creation
or story? Co-creation. No, let's go with story first. Let's go with story, because Stan Lee was the writer,
right?
Okay, he co-created a lot of great things with a lot of just super talented people, which we'll get into just after
I'm
this.
But tell you
the story,
my favorite story, my favorite story,
because Stan Lee was a writer.
It's not exciting.
He's an editor,
yeah. But my favorite story is not an exciting one.
Well, don't say that.
Well, it's not though, but it's Avengers number 4.
Oh,
so and it's Avengers number 4.
The resurrection, reintroduction of Captain America.
Because it's the resurrection of Captain America, and because he resurrected him, he subsequently became my favorite hero. And you know, I don't know if I would have known who he really was without that resurrection and brought into the Marvel fold as an Avenger, right?
Uh-huh.
So you know, because there's lots of timely characters that he could have chosen to bring back.
Fair, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
And he chose Captain America, and I love the character. He's my favorite one. So that's my favorite story, Avengers number 4. I also like the what did I have written here? Hold on. I had to think about it. Oh, Tales of Suspense number 79.
Now, oh, that's the Cosmic Cube.
Cosmic Cube. Uh-huh. And I thought the crazy story around the Cosmic Cube, how it eventually became sentient, and like there's lots of stuff going on, but that all started because of that one issue,
right.
The Cosmic Cube.
That I wrote about that years ago. That Tales of Suspense number 79. What a pivotal issue it was, because look at these Marvel Avengers movies. And not never mind Avengers movies, the Cap movie, the Iron Man movie, they're centering around the Cosmic Cube.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yep,
and the Gauntlet and
all
that.
Stuff.
It's all interconnected. Yep. And really, it starts, it didn't start from there, but
that
was one of the pillars of that story
came in
that stuff. Man, the creative mind.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I mean, just to have that idea.
I think they were like, that's the 60s. They're just probably experimenting with mind altering.
Substances.
Club soda. Yeah.
So I named two of mine. I only said one.
Uh-huh.
But what is at least one of your favorite stories? Then I'm going to ask you another question related to that.
All right.
Favorite story, first of all, because
I think my favorite story, and I'm cheating, because honestly, it's probably most people's favorite story.
Yeah.
So I feel like I should have some sort of cool one that nobody knows
about.
But
right.
I don't. I loved the Galactus trilogy.
Yeah, it's a great one.
I absolutely loved the Galactus trilogy. I loved the storytelling in that. I think that pocket of 65, 66 was, you know, the 67 maybe up to, was just the absolute apex. I felt like 62, 63, 64, he was figuring it all out,
telling
some great, great stories. But then him and his co-creator, Jack Kirby, they were just on point.
Everything they were touching was gold.
Yeah, by FF48. By FF48, they had figured it out, I thought. And that 48, 49, 50, with the coming of Galactus, the Herald Silver Surfer coming first, and you know, and then falling in love with the Earthlings, I don't know. I honestly think that's the best story arc in comics.
Well, the idea behind Galactus and the idea behind, like, of course, Silver Surfer was in there and like all that stuff. It's all fantastic. Right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So that's probably my favorite Stan Lee story. You know, even though it's, again, I'm almost disappointed it was everybody else's favorite Stan Lee story.
Do you have a second story?
Yeah, and it's cheating.
Why is it cheating?
It's cheating, and I feel bad because I tried to think of something outside the FF.
Right.
I really did.
Okay.
I really did. I tried. I go, okay, there's some great Spidey stories he's written. There's some great, you know, X-Men stories. I love FF51.
That's a great...
I love, Lotus Monster. I love, Ben Grimm coming to terms with his monstrosity.
Oh, that's
and,
awesome.
I don't know. That's a one issue thing, hits with so much weight.
Is that the one where it's this monster, this man?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He has to choose whether he
that's
wants
right.
To, yeah,
that's
it's a great,
right.
It's a great story.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
It's sacrifice. Yeah. The thing is, you know, the way I'm in the business of buying and selling comics, Chris, and with the advent of comics being graded and being assigned a grade.
Yeah.
By the way, that's a fantastic issue cover.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
It's Ben Grimm by the Thing by himself.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, it's the Thing by himself.
Right.
And the Thing is still a C-lister.
Right.
Still.
Right. Yeah. On his own. Okay. Yeah.
So it's not the Surfer by himself. It's not Spidey by himself.
Yeah.
It's not the Panther by himself.
No.
It's the Thing by himself. But
no.
With the advent of covers and values being derived from classic covers,
and
the desire for covers, the power and weight of that story is huge, but it doesn't transfer into value.
Right.
Because when you're buying a graded comic, you don't access the power and weight of that story.
No, and
so it's almost symbolic that you own it. Hey guys, you know what's inside here?
Yeah.
A really good story.
That I'll never read.
And you'll never read. But you got to believe me.
Yeah,
whatever, buddy. I'll give you, 20% below market for that book. Right?
Yep.
Whereas, I'm making up a thing, but, Fantastic Four 52 has, the first appearance of T'Challa, first Black Panther, but it also has a beautiful cover, Jack Kirby cover of the Black Panther. So you see the first appearance of this character.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so not only is it a first appearance, which drives values up crazily, but he's on the cover and it's a great cover by a great artist and that drives it. You know, it's good poster art. It's good wall art, all that stuff. Fantastic Four 51 doesn't get the respect it deserves in this advent of graded comic books.
I totally agree. Now, I'm going to ask one more thing.
All right.
Now, you tell me what your favorite story is. What's your favorite creation?
That's a hard
favorite
one.
Favorite character by...
Easy.
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Co-created with Steve Ditko.
Yeah, and Jack Kirby had a hand in it.
Yeah, and Jack Kirby, you're right. And that's the trifecta, right? That's... what's great about... I had Googled... what people's opinions were of the top creative teams in the history of comics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the great part about Stan Lee is he appears twice.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think at number 9 or something on one list with Ditko.
Right.
And, of course, at number 1 with Kirby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, where you have, Adams and O'Neill. Byrne, Claremont, or whatever it was, but you have Stan Lee twice.
Well, he should be up there. He should be in my opinion, he should be up there in every list.
Yeah,
and he should be up in the top 5 of every list.
Well, okay, as creative teams, though. I think when we celebrate on this show Stan Lee, we should also touch on and celebrate what beautiful, talented men that he worked with, like Steve Ditko, like Jack Kirby, like Romita, like Buscema, like Colin, like all these guys, in the Marvel bullpen that helped Stan create these fantastic things. Stan did not do it alone.
No,
Stan was
not.
Definitely, the major ingredient in all of these things, and he was prolific to the point of lunacy in a way, right?
Right.
But he did have talented, creative, innovative men and women working with him to create this stuff. So,
right. I totally agree. Yeah.
I would say Spider-Man because he's so different.
Yeah.
You know, he's not brawn. He's not granite chinned. Yeah, he's not atypical, stereotypical hero.
Right.
He's some scrawny little kid.
Yeah, totally.
He's got girl problems and high school problems and can't find a job and don't have any money problems. This is just so refreshing and revolutionary for the time.
Especially when you're in that age.
In that age, reading those comics as a 12-year-old, it's man, you know, that's my, you know, that could be me.
You know, that kind
of stuff. Yeah. So, for me, it's Spider-Man. How about for you?
You know, I thought a long time about this, and, you know, I think it's the Hulk.
I think it's the Hulk.
Yeah. I love Spidey, don't get me wrong, and I love what he did with the character, and I love all the stories around Spidey. And I certainly love all the villains of Spidey. But I love the Hulk. I love the dichotomy there of, you know, the constant struggle every day that Bruce Banner was having. And, you know, this idea that this giant monster, really, could still be a hero.
Right.
And even he's troubled and, you know, misunderstood and all that stuff. I just always loved all that.
So what Lee did there, I think, was a mash, and plus his own creative thing, it was a mash of Jekyll Hyde, Frankenstein.
Totally, he even says that. I watched an
article. Well, everything's drawn off something else. Everything is inspired by something else. But he added his own twist to it. He added the timely feel of making it a nuclear thing.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, and as Marvel is to do with all the great comics, they're sort of, as he mentioned in that intro that we played, it's a reflection of what's happening in the time period.
Right.
So, of course, at that time, radiation and the nuclear age was all part of it, and in the 1960s, and so, of course, people were scared about radiation and the gamma radiation and the bomb and all that.
Yep.
So, sure, this was a perfect blend for that type of character to come out at that time.
Absolutely right. All right. Chris, we got more to tackle in the show. Is it a good time for a break, or do you want to keep going?
We'll have a quick musical
interlude. Because we're running out of time.
I know.
But we're not running out of topics, unfortunately.
No, we're not. Let's have a quick musical interlude. Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about Stan.
Stan. The man. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Chris, the final portion of the Stan Lee Show, well, brought to you by, and I'm allowing the listener to be creative here, and it'll be by Stan Lee Club Soda.
Stan Lee Club Soda.
So what we're, Chris and I are encouraging you is to, hold on here, we're taking a bottle of Stan Lee Club Soda right now, and goodness.
Careful. Nice.
All right. And what Chris and I are doing is putting
just a little
pinch of Stan Lee Club Soda. And Chris and I are going to raise a glass.
Raise a glass to Stan Lee. Stan Lee with Stan Lee Club Soda.
And we encourage everybody else at home to raise a glass to Stan Lee and Stan Lee Club Soda. Oh, whatever club soda you have at home, designate it the Stan Lee Club Soda for today.
All right.
At least for that toast.
At least for that toast, anyways.
All right, Chris. What I wanted to talk about, and it's almost like an elephant in the room.
Oh, what's that? With Stan Lee?
And I wanted to talk about it because it is a topical thing, and it's a celebration of Stan Lee. And the way I look at this, this too is a celebration of Stan Lee in a way, is the commercialization of Stan Lee.
Right, right.
You know, it's a topic that deserves to be discussed. Since Stan Lee, I mean, we mentioned it earlier, you know, the desire to own a piece of Stan Lee history is
huge.
It's huge now and on everybody's mind. And I don't know. I wrote an undervalued spotlight a couple nights ago, and I consciously wanted to write one that Stan Lee was a part of.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I was honestly conflicted. I honestly was conflicted.
Oh, like, why? How I go, so?
Well, the man just passed.
Right.
Why am I writing about comic book values of with Stan Lee in it? And,
right.
And I'm going, but, and I was back and forth with it. But at the end, I go, well, you know what? Like, this is something to celebrate. This
sure,
is something to talk about. This is something for people to, that they may want, or maybe they don't know this about this issue. And it's like educating people on Stan Lee. And I go, you know what? It's, I don't have a copy. It wasn't designed to make me money.
No,
I just wanted to share information. So at the end of the day, I wanted to write about it.
Yep.
And, I wrote about Fantastic Four number 10.
Right.
From 1963, I believe, January, really early, where he wrote himself and Jack Kirby drew him and Stan into the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was kind of cool and innovative.
Very cool.
And that also started a long-running tradition in Marvel of creators writing themselves into the books.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And
or even just celebrities in general.
Right,
yeah.
And they're even on the cover with their backs turned. And I think Doom visits them at the Marvel offices and demands that they call Mr. Fantastic because he wants to set a trap.
Right.
And he wants to talk about a story that they're writing and all this kind of stuff. And I thought that was so cool. And then I mistakenly wrote that it was Stan Lee's first appearance in comics because I got a great commenter who mentioned that actually Stan Lee wrote himself into a comic in 1951.
Oh, get out.
Right, in Astonishing Number 4.
Wow.
Which I thought was cool. But all that aside, I just wanted to get your opinion on you know, like this free-for-all that's happening on eBay right now with Stan Lee items.
Well, you know, I get it. I get it. You know, I don't even know where to begin on this. He has now entrenched himself into the industry of not just comics, but of literature, of movies, of I don't even know what else. Artwork.
Yeah.
You know, so he is a... And this sounds terrible, and I don't mean it sounding like that, but he's become a relic of a time that's past.
Right.
Right?
He's also, just before I lose my train of thought, he's also, I find him to be an accidental icon.
Totally.
You
totally.
Know? So, like, he is an icon beyond icons, but he never saw himself one or never intended to be one.
Here's a guy that, you know, was just doing his job, loved doing it, you know, and so he continued to do it. But when I say he's a relic, I just mean there are so many people of that time period that have already passed on.
Right.
He is one of the few remaining that are still around.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost like he was a huge influence, a creator. If you ever want to get anything by anybody,
right,
this is one of your last chances.
Right. Is he on par in terms of importance, in terms of 20th century popular culture in America, with a Walt Disney?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Absolutely, for sure.
I think so, too.
No question. In fact, I've even seen articles that have compared him to Walt Disney.
Right.
Which is funny because I'm going to go one step further, and I'm going to say he's even more important than Walt Disney.
Right.
Because Walt Disney didn't he created Mickey Mouse, but he did not design Mickey Mouse.
Right.
That was Ewerks.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of other guys out there that worked for Walt that created the Walt Disney image for Walt, whereas Stan created a lot of the stuff that he was actually working on, right? So he is at least co-creator to a lot more than I think Walt
300
ever was.
And some odd characters, as you say before. I'm in agreement with you, Chris. I think that I don't know if one man helped co-create so much popular culture. His creations and co-creations have reached more. I wrote in my Undervalued Spotlight, I wrote this, I go, This man didn't bring joy to millions. He actually brought joy to billions.
Yeah, totally.
How many people can say that?
Yeah,
how many?
Totally.
You know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, apart from iconic religious figures, which is a totally different topic.
Yeah, we're talking about pop culture here.
But we're talking about pop culture. How many people, pop culture people, writers and whatever, can say that they touched the lives of billions of people?
Well, the reality is, and we gotta
like
speed this
a few.
Up.
Right.
Well, if you talk about anybody, mm-hmm. You know, even religious people,
right.
If you were to go to a different country, they might not know who a particular religious figure is,
right.
But they might know who Superman or Spider-Man is.
Right. My God, Chris, you know what? We knew this would happen. We have like 17 different topics we wanted to touch on, but it's impossible to talk about and engage in a conversation with the life of Stan Lee in one short hour. We apologize to everybody for just rushing everything, but we really wanted to touch on a whole bunch of topics. So please add your comments. If you have any Stan Lee antidotes or stories or anything.
Anecdotes.
It's the club soda that's hitting me.
It's
anecdotes or stories, please add them in the comments field. Comic Culture is on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station. We're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. Please go out and support your local comic shop
and have yourself a great day.